This is Ellen Davis, and I am sitting in the living room in Silver Spring, Maryland on November 8th, 2018 with my best friend in the whole wide world, Sally Mann Eubank Buck, and we've known each other since our first days of nursing in Houston. And we're doing this recording today to talk about what your childhood was like and also to record tidbits of advice for your kiddos. So let's get started. And let's talk about when and where you were born. So tell me a little bit about when and where you were born and where you grew up.
I was born in Richmond, Virginia, in St. Luke's Hospital. And I happened to grow up with a guy whose mother shared the room with my mother, Steve Enzyme. He was born on the 14th, and I was born on the 13th of February. And
so Valentine baby.
Valentine's babies. And my mother had a big dinner and then went into labor and had me in like 3 hours. Her mother had had 15 children and told her it was sinful that my delivery was so easy.
And what year were you born?
1955. And my mother's birthday was the 12th of February, and she'd held off on going to dinner because they thought she'd go into labor, and she didn't. So then she had the dinner and went into labor with me. And mother and daddy had been interviewing to adopt because they'd been married 7 years and had not been able to have a baby. And suddenly mother was quite ill and couldn't go to the interviews or whatever it was they were doing at that time. And lo and behold, it was me. So that's a little bit of foreshadowing for my life.
Ta-da! All right. So let's talk about who your parents were. And their names and what they were like and what your relationship with your parents was like. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your mom and dad?
Okay. Daddy was born May 15th, 1918. His father had actually been like a tween. He'd been like 10, 11, 12 during the Civil War, and had married my grandmother and had a second family with my grandmother. So he and his brother.
So your father's father was quite old, actually.
He was quite old, but nobody knew how old he was because he didn't have any gray hair. But he had seven other children by his first wife, and he had moved to Tappahannock, Virginia from the Mecklenburg area of Virginia, and he had brought tobacco farming to Essex County, Virginia. And,
well, that's cool.
And my dad remembered helping him pack up the tobacco leaves and take them down to Tobacco Mart. And he died when Daddy was 6 and Uncle Bill was 8. And
Uncle Bill is your father's brother.
Right, right, older brother. And they grew up on a farm pretty much with a single mom because my grandmother, Sally Bell Claiborne Eubank, was a widow when she married Grandpa Eubank. And she was born in 1885. And she raised those two boys through the Depression on the farm by herself. She went to some kind of nursing program or school in Farmville, Virginia, and worked at Pine Camp in Richmond, which no longer exists, but it was like a respite tuberculosis recovery center. But she had those two boys, and they had this farm that she had a lifetime right to, but the boys actually owned the farm at 6 and 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. Wow. Now, what about your mom?
Mom was one of 15 children.
Where was she in the lineup?
She was number 12. She was, her parents, her grandfather, John Mann Jr., was an alderman in Richmond. He owned a brick foundry, and they actually have like a couple of memorial gardens in Richmond, courtyards up in Church Hill that his foundry made. It was the Mann Netherwood Foundry.
And, oh, that's cool.
And during the Civil War, it was converted to a smelter. So
a smelter would be where they melted metals down to make, I'm assuming, right. Bullets and cannonballs?
Yep. And we have an umbrella stand that was made at his smelter and his desk from his office. He was quite wealthy. And so Grandpa Mann had, he was a carpenter, and he married Linda C. White out of Fluvanna County, and his brother married her sister.
Convenient.
Very convenient. Mm-hmm. And both of those boys, James Skinner Forbes and Charles, both had a little bit of a trust fund to live off of. And Charles didn't have many kids, but Grandpa Mann was very prolific.
So your mom grew up in a big house with a lot of, mostly girls?
No, yeah, it was 7 girls. 12 survived to adulthood, so 12 girls, 5 guys, and lots of just interesting living on a farm.
And where was their farm?
It was in Hanover County, and it was right next to Washington Henry Elementary School, and they actually gave the land for the elementary school to be built on.
Cool.
And her parents, Grandmother Linda, her parents in Fluvanna had given the land for Fork Union Military Academy to be built. So supposedly, my grandmother graduated high school at Fork Union Military Academy, and anybody in the direct line of the family can go there for free.
All right, good to know. And your mom went to school and became a teacher?
She went to Madison College at the time. It's now James Madison University. She graduated right as World War I was starting. She went through, she had jobs in the library. I think she waited tables in the tea room. Times were hard, money was tight. She played basketball. She could shoot the basketball. And the funny thing was, growing up, all of the good-looking guys in the neighborhood, a little bit older, would all come by to have Mrs. Eubank show them how to do a hook shot and a layup and this kind of thing.
I could totally see your mom doing that.
I know. They'd come. She'd be making dinner. Oh, can't you please come out, Mrs. Eubank, and show us? And I was just like, because they were 3 or 4 years older than me and really cute. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell me about your relationship with your parents, and did you ever get in trouble? Like, what was the worst thing that ever happened to you as a kid, if you want to talk about that?
Well, I don't mind. It was a stupid thing I did. But we were kind of a threesome, and my parents were really good about visiting family. So we were always going for Sunday afternoon down to Farmville to see some of Daddy's relatives, Essie and Charles and things like that. Or we were always going for the weekend to see one of Mother's brothers and sisters. We grew up with five of her brothers and sisters living right around us. So they were always in and out of our house. Mm-hmm. Doors were not closed. You know, they'd come by to visit, drop off something. I had one uncle, Douglas, who always knew when Mother made coconut anything, and he'd show up. And so there was a lot of around. Daddy just loved big family, and so did Mother. And so we had a lot of that. Just, we were always traveling on weekends. They weren't really homebodies. And you know, we took trips, which at that time was a big deal. We went to Canada. We went down to Sanibel Island, Florida, where, you know, I wanted to ride a bike. And the lady said, which way are you going? Because, you know, we have alligators. And Mother said, no, you're not riding your bike. But we did things like we'd go out on the sandbars and dig up seashells and, you know, just a lot of enjoying the nature. Daddy was a big nature bug just to enjoy it and be amazed by, wow, look at that. And I remember the first day when we got to Florida, a porpoise or a dolphin, I never can get them straight, had a fight with a shark, like right where we were swimming. And it was so interesting because, you know, there are no lifeguards or anything. Somebody noticed it, and then they noticed the two were fighting, and they realized that the dolphin or shark, the dolphin or porpoise was fighting off the shark to keep it away.
Wow.
It's kind of really interesting. So, you know, in my school, some kids got vacations, but they weren't like the ones we were taking, which was really nice. And we went to see mother's brother in Mexico. Well, we went to see her brother who was in Houston, and daddy's brother was, Uncle Bill was a big executive at one of the large engineering firms, and he got the company plane, and we flew down to Mexico one time. That was really fun. Very exotic for me, you know, flying in a private plane and
of course,
going yeah. down to Mexico and buying all kinds of junk.
I can only imagine.
Oh, yes. And, you know, just, it was just fun. And they enjoyed, they came through the Depression. And so mother and daddy found delight and enjoyed, you know, anything. And mother always had dinner on the table. It was usually hot bread, two vegetables, a starch, and starch did not count as a vegetable, and a meat. And then there was some kind of fruit salad, which in the 50s and 60s was
a big thing.
Yeah, a big thing, like a slice of pear with a little
The mayonnaise and the grated cheese. Oh, my gosh. That we had that at our house with a little red cherry on top.
Yeah.
I think everybody.
No, she didn't do the cherry.
Did you have canned pears? We had canned pears. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yes.
I haven't eaten that since.
Or like, you know, like two leaves of lettuce with three pineapple rings.
Yes, we did that, too. Did they put little lumps of cottage cheese on there?
Yep.
It must have been in a magazine.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. And she got me started on cottage cheese and apple butter. That's one of my favorite things to eat.
Oh, yeah, you tell me. Nasty. Can't stand it.
Yeah, well,
no. Yeah.
Yeah, but mother got me started down the path of all things Southern and good, like cream of chicken, like the leftover chicken on Sundays, the cream of chicken over waffles.
Oh, yeah.
And peanut soup and pancakes on Sunday night. Oh, that was just so
good. I love the way your mama used to talk. She had that Eastern Virginia Tidewater, almost like a British accent.
She did.
I wish I had a recording. Can you imitate how she talked? Can you say a couple of things like that your mother would have said?
Well, she said roof. Everything was roof, brown. I like my gravy brown.
I can remember saying about.
About.
About the house.
Yes, she goes about the house. She's going downtown, and she drew out ambulance. It wasn't an ambulance. It was ambulance. Oh, they came and got him in the ambulance. But she just was proper. And if she said a bad word, it was a real stressful occasion. Because
yeah.
it was, she was yeah. really
she
stressed.
Was a, she was a Southern lady.
Yeah, and Daddy was a Southern guy. I was helping him get gas in the boat one time at a marina, and the boat drifted over and smashed my finger, and I said a curse word, and he made me walk the mile back in my bare feet to the house at the river because he was just so beside himself that I had said a curse word.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't say bad words. I don't even know if I knew all the bad words, but I didn't say bad words until I went off to college, and I was in a hall with a bunch of girls that swore like sailors. And then I came home from break the first time, and you know, they all came out, and it was terrible. My parents were just shocked and dismayed, and now those things are fairly common, I think, unfortunately.
I know. Well, let me tell you, I had a long, hot, ouchy walk from the boathouse over by Bill Creek's place on Richmond Beach, back over to Land's End, where we had a little house, to think about saying something when it really smashed my fingers.
All right, I'm going to pause for a second.
Okay, so we're back. I want to talk about, if you remember, like, one bad thing you did when you were a kid, because I think it's always fun for your children to hear that, you know, mom and dad aren't perfect, and if you can remember something bad you did when you were younger.
Well, I remember when I finished the seventh grade, I was so ecstatic because I was going to be going to high school. We started high school in eighth grade, and for whatever reason, aerosol deodorant was a new thing.
Spray deodorant.
And so for whatever reason, I sprayed it on my walls in my bedroom, not knowing that it was going to show up on the wall. And so I spent the first week.
Wait, did it show up like foam or something? Or what did it look like?
It showed up like, you know, I sprayed class of 1972.
Oh, like writing with spray paint. Like graffiti.
Uh-huh. And I spent the first week of my summer vacation washing the walls because my father had a fit.
Like Tom Sawyer, was he sitting in a lawn chair watching?
No, but he was he was quite annoyed with me and quite vocal and
I can imagine.
Yeah, he was just like, he went nuts.
Okay, so moving along to what was a perfect day for you when you were at some point in your younger life? Like, what was just like the
bliss?
Yeah.
There was winter bliss and there was summer bliss.
Okay.
Summer bliss day was just hanging out with my transistor radio on top of the boat pole with my inner tube tied up to the boat pole, floating in the river, reading my book or my, you know, celebrity magazine, Tiger Beat or Teen, or I forget what the other ones were, where we'd read about Davy Jones or Bobby Sherman or any of those.
Yeah.
And then winter bliss was we would go tramping in the woods at the farm after church. We always went to church. So in the morning, Sundays were just great days because start off reading the comics on the floor in the living room, have breakfast, go to church, come home. Mother would have the linens out, hot roast beef, dinner.
And dinner was in the middle of the day.
Roast beef, gravy, carrots, onions, potatoes, and some green vegetable, and of course, some delicious baked good that Mother had made on Saturday. And, oh, by the way, Mother, if she would make a cake, and she was making a cake to give to a neighbor for some occasion, like somebody had died or some other reason, she would make two cakes, and she would take a slice out of one cake to make sure that the cake had risen and did right.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, or she'd throw it away. So a lot of times that was what we got, was the one that fell in the middle or something. But and then we'd go to my Aunt Hazel's, and we'd pick up my cousins Julie and John and walk through Hazel's Woods, or we'd go down to where my Aunt Squeak and Uncle Moo Moo were. And
those are great names.
Yeah, and their kids, Jeannie and Ed, were really little, and maybe we'd go walking. They were living with her dad, Mr. Hall, on his farm. And we'd go walking in their woods and walk through the fields and see if we found any relics. I grew up in an area where there had been lots of Civil War battles, so we were always kind of keeping an eye out. A lot of the kids I went to high school with had authentic Confederate States of America buckles and stuff that had literally turned up while plowing their fields. And my cousin John had an enormous collection of Civil War bullets, buttons, all kinds of just different ammo that he found doing these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. So that was your winter bliss.
That was winter bliss.
Okay, and did you have a nickname growing up? Did kids call you anything? I didn't have one. It's kind of hard to make a nickname out of Ellen, but did you have one?
Well, considering my name was Sally Mann, they called me Sally Mander a lot of times. And I did not like that.
No, most kids don't like their nicknames. That's cute, though.
Yeah, but they would call
me. Was it girls and guys or just boys?
Just boys. And my cousin Julie's father, Uncle John, didn't help because he always called me Sally's man.
Ah.
And that was cute because he always had a big grin on his face. Mm-hmm. And he'd say, Sally's man.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was you know, I thought that was kind of weird until later in life. And then I thought, oh, I wish he was around to say, Sally's man, come here. You want to, he always liked to roast peanuts, or we'd go out and get chestnuts under his chestnut tree, and he'd roast the chestnuts for us on a afternoon or something. That was really nice. Sounds like a good
fall activity. Okay, let me get my other questions here. Okay, so we're back. Do you have any favorite stories from when you were a kid? Everybody's always got something funny or...
I have a couple. We had a lady who came and, you know, basically watched out to make sure my grandmother, who lived with us, Grandmother Eubank, didn't fall down the stairs or something. But she also ironed all the sheets and pillowcases and daddy's shirts, and everything got ironed, which today does not happen.
Was she like a maid?
She was like, yeah, she was like a maid, nanny, housekeeper.
Yeah.
Pauline. And
well, we had one named Pauline too.
Yeah. And she, I remember when I was going to school, girls weren't allowed to wear pants.
Yep.
No pants.
Junior year in high school for us. And they had to be a matching pantsuit.
Right. So I was little, and I actually locked the utility room door, and when Pauline got it open, I held my body against the door, and I pulled on my pants under my dress and ran out the back door to catch the bus. And Pauline and grandmother were just beside themselves, to say the least.
Now, how old were you when you pulled this prank?
Probably second grade, third grade. You were
just determined to wear pants.
I was just determined.
And was it like one of those special exception days when it was cold out and you could wear pants because it was snowing or something?
No, it was just darn cold at the bus stop standing there with bare legs and knee socks.
Yeah.
So anyway, I wanted that.
Did they send you home or did you get in trouble?
No, I just, you know, took them off when I got to school.
Oh, okay. Well, that was smart.
But you weren't supposed to go with them, but... Another time that was really funny was Daddy was very prominent in the Presbyterian Church, I guess, administration. He had been the clerk of the session at our church for a long time. So we always had a lot of people from the divinity school hanging around the house or coming by or coming for dinner or something. So we had this theology student who I guess was giving her senior sermon or something. Anyway, so she came for dinner and we went tramping through the woods, and it was right after Halloween, and we were up at Aunt Hazel's and we had Julie and John with us, and we're going through the woods, and John Austin was small enough that he had, this is Aaron, Catherine and Katie Austin man's father, and he had his Halloween candy with him. And we got over...
Just for safekeeping.
And so it was mother and this divinity student and me and the kids. And we're just having this grand time walking through the woods. And look at this and look at this. And we'd find soldier moss, or we'd find the last lady slipper or something. And so we get to Mr. Lewis's farm and we're walking through the edge of his field. And he had a pony. And the pony came over. And my mother was, even growing up on a farm, my mother was terrified of farm animals, just terrified. So John Austin made the mistake of giving the pony a piece of his Halloween candy, like a Snickers bar or something like that. So then the pony got very aggressive, nipping and grabbing him, and he started crying, and we started running, and the pony started running. And so what happens? My mother, who was a track star in high school, literally hurtled the fence.
I could so see this. Your mother had huge long legs.
Yes. She hurdled the fence, got on the other side of the fence and said, come on, children, let me help you. Let me help you. You know, and here's the poor theology student who has no vested interest in any of us because she's just...
She has no idea what's going on.
Right. And she's just like putting herself between the horse and the kids. And we just all laughed. And so...
Did everyone get over the fence?
Everyone got behind the fence and the pony didn't get any more candy. And I'm not sure if John Austin lost his candy or not. But another time, which I thought was really funny, mother and daddy's best friend was the county doctor. And Claude Kelly would come. This is David Kelly's father. Would come, and he would just come in and lay on our couch two or three nights a week. While he was taking call, Daddy would ride with him to take call. He'd have dinner because he lived on a big farm about a half hour away, and his kids were down there, and I always played with his kids. So either his daughter Karen was staying with me, or I was staying with them. But we went to go swimming at their pond at Brighton, and it was so hilarious because the cows got hot, and he had all these black Angus.
They came swimming with you?
Well, he had married a second time. Mother and Daddy had introduced him to Joe, who was pregnant with David and Earl, the twins, and she was really pregnant because they were born in September, and this was like August. And we were out there swimming, and it was Kelso and Karen and Paula and me. Daddy and Claude were out in a canoe bass fishing, and all of a sudden the cows got hot and decided they were all coming into the pond. And
what did you
Joe do? Didn't care because she'd grown up on a dairy farm and she wasn't afraid. But here she is, 8.5 months pregnant with twins, and she's trying to herd them away because mother is terrified, and swam out to where like the water was almost neck deep. And she's got me on one arm and Kelso on one arm, and you know, she's got Karen and Paula in her arms, and we're all on top of her, and everybody's screaming. And here come Daddy and Claude with the, paddling. I mean, they look like they were jet propelled coming through to like scare off the cows. And it was just the cows were hot and they wanted to get in the water.
So how did it all end? The cows went out, or?
Well, they got the cows to move away, but I think Dr. Kelly was really concerned that he might have a delivery right now.
I was going to say, she didn't. I was thinking you were going to say she delivered in the pond or something.
No. But it was just one of those, like, calm down. Everybody else, mother's excitement got the kids excited and terrified.
Yeah.
And Joe wasn't upset. Claude wasn't upset other than to see his very pregnant wife upset. And Daddy was upset because his wife's out there with, like, 4 kids hanging on to her screaming. It was absolutely a memory. We just had a lot of fun hanging, you know, with that family too. I taught Karen how to drive. We drove around through the field in the Plymouth Fury. We'd drive to the end of the lane, turn around, come back, scream, yell. She'd hit the brakes. It was great.
Cool. All right. Now we're going to change gears just a little bit. Okay. Both your children, Helen Page, the oldest, and Nora Grace are adopted. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about what you thought when you first saw each of them, how you all picked their names, and what advice you might have for them going forward in their lives, and if you have any dreams for them. So let's start with the first time you saw each of them.
Well, when we saw Helen Page, we had filled out paperwork, and it had taken an enormous amount of effort and time, and we had waited 2 years to see her little face, and we saw her face, and it was just the look on her face in the picture was like, "Where are you? I'm waiting." And it was just love at first sight, and we just couldn't wait until we got there. And then we got there, and they put her in our arms. Like, we got off the elevator. Oh, they're the Bucks. They get that baby. And we were like, and they were like, you know, here, go take a look at her, see if you want to keep her. And we were like, what do you mean? She's ours forever.
And then tell me how you picked her name. Like, what's the significance of Helen Page and Benny?
Well, Steve's grandmother was a very remarkable woman in New York. I think she was in Queens. She owned her own knitting shop. She was one of the first women to have her own insurance brokerage.
Cool.
Yeah. And so her name was Helen, and evidently she was very beautiful. And she had died early. His father grew up, probably lost his mom in the teens or something. So Steve kind of wanted to name one of the children after his grandmother. Mm-hmm. Paige came from, my name was supposed to be Paige Claiborne. And as I understand it, Dr. Kelly had to rewrite my birth certificate because they had named me Paige Claiborne. And my grandmother Eubank came in, and she was a really big, imposing woman. And she came in and said, this is the first girl child in our family in many, many moons, and you are naming her after me, aren't you? And mother and daddy evidently were so intimidated by her that they were like, yes. And they used to call her Miss Sally. So that was, yes, Miss Sally. So we changed our name, and I never got over the fact that I wanted to be called Paige. So Helen got the Paige.
All right, cool.
And Eleanora Grace was a little older when we met her. When we first saw her. But again, we had waited and waited and waited. It was just excruciating after you submit this paperwork and you just keep saying, you know, this child is there and needs to come. Well, we got pictures of her, and she was so giggly, cute, adorable.
She's still giggly, cute, adorable.
Well, she is. And it was so much, it was just like, oh my gosh. And so we met her by photograph, and we sent her a bunch of things, which we couldn't send Helen Page, because Nora Grace came from Vietnam, and they would let you send packages, but the Chinese with Helen Page would not. So we sent Nora Grace little soft dog and a blankie and a little picture book. And that was in the summer. And then they wouldn't let us come and get her until Christmas. So she was, we got Nora Grace December 27th, December 26th, actually. And that was the day after Christmas. So we spent Christmas in the Hong Kong airport, which was hilarious all in itself. And we met Nora Grace, and the first thing she did, same handoff, poor Nora Grace, had never seen a man, and we go in there, and they just plop her in Steve's arms. Steve had a goatee at the time and glasses, and he was very, you know, he is a very tall man. He's like 6'3". And they just plopped her in his arms and said, here you go. And she just looked at him and began screaming and didn't stop screaming for, you know, 3 days.
Got home to the United States.
Yeah, she didn't. But she warmed up. Helen Page was 7 and pushed me out of the room one time because she said, Mommy, you make her unhappy. She screams. And so Steve and Helen Page had to change her diaper, and I had to sleep in the living room of the suite that we were in Saigon. It was just such a terrific experience for all of us, but except for Nora Grace, who was really whacked out for a while. But she, you know, when we got Nora Grace, she was 2 years and 2 months old. She had not talked. She had not walked much. And she just rocketed through lots and lots of milestones. She ate like a little pig. She hadn't had real food. And we just had the greatest time going to the grocery stores and finding things to feed her, like creme brulee. And she, to this day, she likes flan. And it's, you know, it was just a lot of fun. We were feeding her all the time, and we'd put her in a backpack and haul her up a hill to see the biggest, you know, figure on the hill, or we went to the beach and she screamed because her feet had never been in sand. And
how did you pick her name?
Well, Steve's godmother was his mother's oldest sister, Eleanor, and he loved that name. And so we said, well, Eleanor, what goes with Eleanor? And I picked Grace, and we said Nora Grace is a good contracted name. And where I come from in Virginia, a lot of people call people by their first and middle names. And I had an Asian author, An Chi Min, tell me one time that she loved the names because she said they sounded Asian if you said them quickly with the emphasis. She said, I like what you did. You gave them American names, but they have Asian sounds. Helen Page, Nora Grace. So that was cute.
All right, before we run out of time, what dreams do you have for your girls, and is there any advice that you would give them for their children growing up? We have about 10 minutes.
Okay. Well, I would say for both children that we were just so pleased that we were able to bring them to this country to live and thrive and grow up and do whatever it is makes them happy and feel whole and feel worthwhile. We don't have expectations on them. And I have to say that is one of the most fun things about foreign adopted kids, because you never know what's going to come out. Both of my girls are very artistic and very talented in that regard, and I can't even draw a straight line. So it's just been, you know, really, really fun. And
you've been a good mom.
Aww.
I've been lucky to have you.
Aww. But that part is just, they've just been interesting kids. They've been fun kids. They've, you know.
Any advice for them when they have children someday that you would, any pearls of wisdom that you can think of?
Well, I would say what I have tried to do is keep them safe. As I've always told them, my number one job is to keep them safe. Number two job is to keep them healthy and whole. And, you know, number three is to get them to adulthood. And then anything after adulthood, they're on their own. But I want them to just be happy and healthy and able to, you know, take care of themselves, fend for themselves, but just basically enjoy life, because each of these girls, each of you, Helen Page and Nora Grace, in your country with what was going on at the time, the cultural time that you were adopted, you both would have had a very hard time surviving, and you would have had a terrible, hard, harsh life had you stayed there. And you were very lucky that your birth mothers gave you up and knew and trusted that you would get put with a family that basically only wanted the best for you. And so when you have your children, just want the best for them. That is what they want. You can't put any kind of expectation on them and hope that they're talented in this, or force them, like, say, well, you've got to become a this or a that, because that may not be where the passion is. And with Helen Page, we're seeing the passion for being an illustrator animator. Helen Page is pursuing that. Nora Grace, I swear you're going to be a big name in the fashion industry. Each of you has instinctively always known what you wanted, what looked good on you, what you were going to do. It just is startling that you know, and you just have always known, both of you, as from little kids. Nora Grace, you particularly, you always know.
I would have to agree with that.
Yeah, Ellen.
What little I've observed, yeah.
Yeah, and Nora Grace, you have always known what you wanted. I mean, I have a story about Saigon. They were calling it Ho Chi Minh City when we were there, but the old name was Saigon. And we went by the shoe store, and there was a little pair of shoes, and Helen Page noticed them. They had little rabbits on the toes. And oh, Lord, you went in, and like that was all she wrote. You were going to have those shoes no matter what. And you were, you know, 2.5 years, you weren't even 2.5 years old. And you sat in there, and we were not leaving that store without getting you those shoes.
You still have the shoes?
They got lost somewhere.
Aww.
I tried to put them away, but we went to a lacquer factory. Like, we had a guide showing us around the different sites, and you do have these shoes that were platform, black lacquer, mother of pearl inlay. You know what I'm talking about, with a pink strap across them and all these seashells. And you were just strutting around that store in those, and you would not take those off because they were so gorgeous. And it was just, you know, it was just laughable. You've always, always known what you liked, what you wanted. Helen Page, same thing with you. Singular focus. I know I want to do this. And you just charged ahead with everything to make that happen. So I'm very proud of both of you, that you both have that drive. I was always a little fuzzy, a little wishy-washy. I wanted to be a lawyer. My father said, no, you had to do something to make a living that you could eat all the time. And so I decided to be a nurse. And that was a good thing. I don't regret it at all. It was an excellent education. But both of you seem to have a clearer focus. And I think that's just a remarkable talent.
Any other parting words for the interview? I have some. You're my best friend in the whole wide world. And we've had lots of adventures together. And I'm going to cry now.
No, she's not going to cry.
We've had so much fun. And my life has been so much richer because you've been in it. And I just love you and want you to know that. And all of our fun memories will always, always be a treasure for me.
Yeah. Let's see how much time is left. Yeah. Ellen made fun of me and gave me a hard time when we were in Mesa Verde, Arizona, when I crawled under a car to change the film in my camera, which did not catch. And of course, she's the only one that ever had any pictures from this trip all the way up through Mesa Verde and the Red Rocks and stuff. And she was just like, what are you doing? And we both had new 35mm cameras, and I'm under the car changing the film, and she's making fun of me. And then when we went to Vermont, we initiated the, I guess it was the back rub or the foot rub.
It was foot rubs. We went on a bike, end-to-end biking trip. It was hilarious.
It was great because we both developed a crush on the guy who had given up his career as some kind of commercial banker and was living out of a barn and running this
Bike Vermont. It's still a company. He sold
it. Yeah, but he sold it. And we were both like, oh, he's so gorgeous. How, you know.
We've had a lot of adventures.
Yes.
Went to Greece together, went to Vermont together, went to Colorado together. Where else did we go?
We did something else.
I don't know. We've done a lot of things.
We've done a lot of things. In Greece, that was pretty funny. We ended up in the middle of a pomegranate field driving because Ellen was trusting Google Maps, and I was like...
And it wasn't even... I don't even think it was a road, and the guy couldn't speak English. I was terrified he was going to come out with a shotgun and kill us all.
Oh.
Anyway. Well, it was just funny. We need to wrap this up. But, so these are Sally's memories, Sally's advice, and it's been great. Getting this for posterity. And,
yes.
Love you to death.
Love you. And, love my girls. Love my husband.
All righty. Well, we'll end it now. End of interview. Thanks.
Yeah, I had to put that in.